Okay, we are up to Perek Yedaled, chapter 14. But before we can actually get into the parak, we have to deal with a problem, and that's what you see on your sheets. The introduction to the lottery, the system that they use to distribute the land, and the problem fundamentally is seen from the Psukim in Parashas Pinchas. If you take a look at source number 1, this is the instruction that is given. L'rav tarbe nachalaso, v'lama'at tam'id nachalaso. To a shevet that is larger, it sounds like, you will give more. V'lama'at, to a shevet that is smaller, tam'id nachalaso, so you should give less. Ish l'fi fikudav, yutam nachalaso. Each person, according to his numbers, meaning each tribe, it sounds like, according to their numbers, yutam nachalaso, the portion should be given. So, in other words, large tribes get more, small tribes get less. Simple? Straightforward. Ach begoral yechalegas haaretz lishmos matos avosam yinchalu. But then it says, only via lottery shall the land be distributed by the names of the matos avosam. What did I translate here? The tribes of their fathers. Right, that'll do. They'll take a portion. Apia garote chalek nachalaso bin rav lemaat. And according to the lottery, we're going to distribute this. The land will be distributed between a lot or in a little, between great and few. So, is this by lottery? It says explicitly it's by lottery.
Good question.
Well,
no, it's by. Yeah, it's like a.
Yeah.
Well, no.
It is by lottery. It says it has to be by lottery, but at the same time, it says that you're supposed to give more to the one who is greater and less to the one who is lesser. How are you going to actually do that if you're just doing it by lottery? You could say, I suppose, the lottery will take care of it. No, it's not my job. I don't have to worry about that. The lottery will figure out and give more to the one who is greater and less to the one who is lesser. But that leaves me two problems. Problem number one is then why put it into the pasuk? It sounds like an instruction. Make sure that the large one gets more. Make sure the small one gets less. And second, what's the mechanics of such a lottery? How does that work in practice? Yeah, describe the lottery.
You have a lottery, and then if you're too great for the land that you got, maybe you can increase
Right. So that was one suggestion. I put this question out. Oh, you weren't here. That's right.
Yeah.
So I put this question out at the end last time, and that was one suggestion. In other words, we'll do a lottery, but we'll fudge it.
Like
in lab, right? This is the answer we got. This is the answer we were supposed to get. So multiply it all by 0.75, and then it all works. That doesn't sound like what the pasuk is saying. I don't know what the pasuk is saying, but that doesn't sound like it.
Someone suggested last week the division of like big tribes, medium tribes, smaller tribes, and do a lottery than that. So you among you four, you'll choose by lottery among these four lands, and you three among these three lands.
Mm-hmm. So what that means then is that I have to do, I guess, multiple lotteries, effectively.
Maybe it was the area, and then they did the borders.
Meaning
the lottery was for area, but the borders hadn't been defined yet. And then after that, they defined the borders to go around the area
your family.
Based on the size
so
of
in
the
other words, you're going to be up north, you're going to be down south, you'll be by the water?
Yeah, but like maybe they had, like imagine if you just like take a map and put 12 cities on it, and then do a lottery for those 12 cities, and then you expand the borders to accommodate the...
Right. Okay, and that's one of the possibilities that we're going to see, is that it's by region. That may be. Can you fit that into the pasuk?
I like the one there.
Well, yeah. The lottery divides the land, and then the numbers to the size of the lot.
Yeah, I think you can. You could do it that way. What are you going to say?
That I like the suggestion we made last week that the lottery could be for what was it again? The lottery could be for portion of land. And the size of it is based on the family. So if you're a large family, you've got a bigger size within your portion, right?
Right. But the problem you'll run into is that there is a range of sizes among the tribes. We're talking about like 70,000 down to 40-something thousand.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Or the opposite.
Yeah.
So it was also mentioned that the lottery is for the individual, maybe? So maybe the land... Her tribe is portioned, but then within each tribe, could it be?
That there's a lottery inside the tribe? Maybe. That sort of defies logic.
Well, who's going to get which part of the tribal land? Like, if you're the tribe...
Right,
you know what I mean?
Understood, but Number one, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like the lottery is going on.
The tribe is associated with the lottery. The tribe isn't associated with the lot. No? Am I wrong?
Sorry?
Meaning, like what Sim is saying, the tribe is associated with the lottery, right? The lottery, you should divide up according to the names of the tribes.
Yeah.
But the portions are not associated, it doesn't say anything about the tribes. So maybe the portions are the families and the lottery is the tribe.
Portions are the family.
In the tribe. And the lottery is the tribe.
Right, so that's the opposite of what Sim is saying.
I'm saying the opposite.
Oh, sorry.
Because then, yeah, I'm saying the opposite.
This is not simple and straightforward. Right. It's a little bit of a mess, and the next pasuk I brought you in source number 2 doesn't make it any easier. You're going to do this by lot according to your families. Larav tarbu es nachlaso v'lamat tamit es nachlaso. More for the greater, less for the fewer. El asher yetze lo shama hagorol. Wherever his lottery puts him, lo yehiya. That's where it's going to be. L'matos avos nechem tis nechalo. According to the tribes of your ancestors, you shall receive portions.
Well, it almost sounds like there's the different tribes, but then within the tribes, there's almost a lottery within the tribes. Where in that portion are you going to be and how big you get?
Right, so that was Sima's suggestion.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
I have a very hard time reading this.
That was like my first take on it.
Mm-hmm. It's a problem. And Abarbanel notes another problem. This is what we had concluded with last time. If you take a look at source number 3, regarding the fate of Ephraim and Menashe. V'kasha od tzivachas b'nei Yosef. It's also difficult in terms of the complaint of Yosef. We haven't seen the complaint yet. It's coming a few chapters from now. But they indeed complained, saying, Madu anasata li goral echad v'chevel echad v'ani amrav. Why did you give us one lot and one portion? I am a great nation. What he means by Yosef, we'll see when we get to Perek Yitzayin, because of course Yosef is Ephraim and Menashe. We'll get there. But they complained about the size of the land they had. If they got what they got because the lottery gave it to them, then they don't get to complain. That's it. God gave it to you. I didn't decide it. It was Hashem. And if you're going to tell me that the division of the land was in fact based on how many people there were, yiksha cannot by lottery, yikshem kein mashabirech Yaakov leYosef. Then I don't understand the bracha Yaakov gave Yosef, shenasan lo habechora, giving him the firstborn birthright by giving him a double portion, ba'omro, Ephraim u'menashe, Ruvain v'shimon, saying Ephraim and Menashe will be like Ruvain and Shimon. V'tia lefize bracha levatala u'matana b'li ilui. So it's a bracha in vain. It's a worthless gift that you gave him. Why? Kim yiyu gugulos harbei mevor sheet nulo chelek rav. V'in yisron beyos m'shnei shvatim moshe b'recha. It doesn't matter whether you're two tribes or one tribe. Because the point is, if they were one, if he hadn't doubled them up, doesn't matter. If they total between them 106,000 people, they're going to get land for 106,000 people. And if they're in fact they're going to get land for 106, whether they are one tribe or they're viewed as two tribes, doesn't make a difference. If anything, what he has done may be construed as a bad thing in that he has separated them. Now you're two tribes, therefore part of you could be here and part of you could be here. Or in fact, this happened to Menashe. Part of Menashe is here, part of Menashe is here, and then part of Ephraim is somewhere else entirely. So, effectively, what he's done could be worse for them. Because now they're getting the same piece of land, number one, and they're losing unity. And again, you know, with some siblings, that's better. I don't know what they wanted. But
do they end up being near each other, Ephraim and Menashe?
They're essential.
Ephraim is
central. Half of the Menashe and Ephraim.
Right.
You know, so the other half's on the other side. But.
Right. The other half, Menashe is north.
The other Menashe is next to Ephraim.
Yes. And they seem to have a large portion in comparison to the rest of the Shvatim.
Right. Which we'll have to get to in terms of the size of the Shvatim and the land they got and so on.
Yeah, you brought up Yaakov's bracha and everything. And I think I had asked this a while ago. But, you know, with all these brachas, it just seems to me that, you know, it's funny that, like, Zulim didn't get the shore.
Right,
know?
We're getting to it.
Okay, that's what I wanted to add. It's bothered me for a while. But.
Yeah, no, that's fine. We discussed it a little bit last time. Yeah. If you catch the audio, we talked about it in terms of God and Menashe. Mm-hmm. As we go through where each shave it is, we'll have to address the question of why they got what they got and how to understand it in light of the bracha, because some of the brachas do speak to particular areas. So we have four solutions that we're going to look at. And what I'm offering is actually the simplified version of things. Barbanel goes on for pages and pages on the different Gemaras and ways to resolve them. And he has a lot of fun. And if you want, I'll be glad to email you the Barbanel on it to go through. But I'm sticking to the basic four. Rashi, Ramban, Ralbag, and Abarbanel / Malbim. So the first approach is Rashi's approach as understood by Abarbanel. Malbim has another way to take Rashi, but I'm taking it this way. Rashi writes in Parshas Pinchas, L'shevet shahaya meruba be'uchlesin nasnu chelek rav. If a tribe had many people, they got a large portion. Even though that meant that obviously they were going to be uneven, right? We're going to give certain tribes larger and certain tribes smaller. Because based on the size of the tribe, that was how they did this. They did it all via lottery, which worked out based on the special divine inspiration, how Hashem governs it, Kamoshim Mufurish, Bibaba Basra, like the Gemara says, Elazar Akoin Hayamalubash Ba'urim Vitumim, Ba'omer Baruch HaKodesh, Im Shevet Ploni Ola, Tchum Ploni Ola Imo, he would make his announcement with Ruach HaKodesh, if such and such a tribe comes out, it's going to get such and such, and then he would pick up the pieces, and sure enough, it would match what he had announced. So he says, that actually worked. In other words, it is a goral, it's done by lottery, and the lottery makes sure that the larger tribes get larger bits, and the smaller tribes get smaller bits. What's your mechanism for doing this?
Two little lotteries.
Sorry?
Two little lotteries.
Nope, look what he says. Well, yes, there are two lotteries, but Vashvatim hayuksufim b'yud beis pitkin, he said you had 12 pieces of paper, each one had the name of a tribe on it. B'yud beis givulim b'yud beis pitkin, and you had 12 sets of boundaries on 12 pieces of paper. Ubalum bekilfi, they mixed them up in a box. V'hanasi machnis yadol l'socha v'notol shnei pitkin. And the nasi put his hand into the box, and he took out two pieces of paper, meaning the nasi from each shevet would go up to select on behalf of his shevet. Ola biyado petek shal shem shifto, and through Ruach HaKodesh, he ends up with the note that has his tribe written on it. Upetek shal gevul ha'meforesh lo, and the other note will have the boundary that is indeed meant for his tribe. V'ha-goral atzmo hayat soveach, and the goral itself declared, V'omer saying, Ani ha-goral alisi ligvul ploni, I am the lot that arose for this person, l'shevet ploni, for this boundary, I should say, l'shevet ploni, for this tribe. Where do you get the idea that the lottery actually spoke? Shenemar al pi ha-goral, because look back at the pasuk that we used. The pasuk said, it was in source number one, al pi ha-goral, literally on the mouth of the lottery. So the lottery spoke. The lot spoke. Well, it's a good way to convince people that it's legit, because it wouldn't be, you know, for like millennia before they would start looking for batteries. V'lonis chalka ha'aretz b'mida l'fi she'esh gevul meshubach mechaveiro ela b'shuma. And so he says, the land was not divided by measure, because one portion would be better than the next, but it was done by appraisal. In other words, what they did was, and we saw that with Menashe already, in terms of Menashe getting this larger piece of land in the north, even though they're not under this lottery, they were already on the eastern side of the Yarden. But the idea in principle is, actually that's an interesting question, come to think of it. Rashi wrote 12.
Well,
it's not. The three were on the other side. They weren't part of this. So it's not really 12.
Two are on the other side, because
Menashe still got. Yeah. Right, Menashe still got, so fine, it should be
10. I understand what the point of this whole goral was. According to this, the whole point of a lottery is that something is by chance, so that you can't refute it later. It was up to whatever.
Yep.
But if it's being done by Ruach HaKodesh,
we don't refute that either.
But meaning, so but why do you
have
why
to
why you get a lottery? Ruach HaKodesh, you're going to get this decision when you get
right.
The point of the lottery.
Right, so
it's like
for what? Yes and no. You're right, but what's the response? You're right, but what's the response to that?
I knew it was.
Yes,
you. I was explaining the theorem. It's the same idea. It's a lottery, right. And then we knew it was Ruach HaKodesh choose. So I mean, I think it's just things legitimate for the people.
More understanding.
But meaning, if they knew that it's coming by Ruach HaKodesh and the lottery spoke, and it was, then it's not a lottery. Is supposed to be by chance, complete randomness.
That's what a lottery
is.
That's
just random, the genius.
I'm just saying, if God was just decreed and announced, okay, everyone gets this portion, but the fact that they did that, I guess, I don't know, it just shows there's some sort of fairness to it. I know it's, I mean, that's my opinion.
I think, well, there are two things. Number one is that you threw in a name that doesn't belong, and that's Moshe. Moshe's gone. This is going on now.
Sorry.
No, but that matters a great deal.
Okay.
If Yehoshua gets up, and maybe even if Moshe got up, frankly, but certainly if Yehoshua gets up there and he says, I, with my divine inspiration, have declared that so-and-so is going to be here. How long would it take for somebody to say,
okay, then you say that God said this?
Even
the head of the tribe comes up and the Urim and Thummim says out loud, what's the deal with the picking? It's not chance. It's not randomness.
But it is. And I'll show you. It's not chance. You're right. But it's...
I don't think it is. They're saying right
the
now.
Idea
it's
is...
Already divine. It was divine, whatever.
The idea of using the Goral is that you limit the role of human involvement to try to demonstrate that human beings were not involved in this. And therefore, I'm not even going to declare anything. It was declared for me by the piece of paper. And having each one have his piece of paper come up with his Shevet's name on it is, I think, the key. Because that means, you know, remember when we learned about Achan and the whole, you know, taking from the spoils of Yericho. So we read in the Gemara that Achan's response when he ends up being the one who's picked, his response is, you know, if we cast lots between you and me, Yehoshua, one of us would show up being guilty. You know, in other words, it's all, yeah, someone is going to get zapped. So it's just chance that it landed on me. So what Yehoshua is doing here, by setting this up with a lot, which inexplicably turns up with the Nasi from Gad, well, Gad is a bad example, he's on the wrong side of the Yarden, but the Nasi from Naphtali, picking out one in it, look, it says Naphtali, and one from Zebulun, picking one out, and look, it says Zebulun. That's meant to anchor people's faith in what happened here, because even though there are 12 pieces in there and something was going to come up, and who's to say it's the right one, the other one that came up had his name on it. And that's something that impresses people.
Well, that answered my other question of why did they have to pick up their name if they're representing it?
And that's the answer, is I think it's meant to cement their faith in the process. Because you know people are going to yell and scream and say, we didn't want this and that wasn't what was supposed to happen and so on and so forth. So what you've accomplished now is you've avoided that problem. What he hasn't done, what Rashi has not done here, there are three problems. There are three problems with Rashi's system. Problem number one is, how did they know which portions to create? In other words, according to this, they have 12 predetermined portions of varying sizes that they're now going to put in there and divide. Like, how do you know where to draw your boundaries? You don't know who's getting them. Yeah, it seems very strange. Unless you're going to say that they followed natural boundaries. But I don't know the geography well enough to be able to find that.
They just went to conquer a few places. Did they know the whole land well enough to be able to divide it anyway?
I don't know.
They haven't been there in how many years? Right?
But that's one problem. Well, 40 for the spies, of whom, you know, most of them are gone. The second challenge is that the pasuk itself says in the beginning of source number one, La Rav Tar Benach Laso, you are supposed to give a lot to the many. Lama Tamitas Nach Laso, you're supposed to give a smaller portion to the few. Now you're not doing it at all. It's all a lottery. You have no role. It's entirely Goral. And then the third problem is, what do I do with Yaakov's gift to Menashe and Ephraim? That hasn't explained anything. If the portion they receive is based on their size, then again, you could have left them together, had a supersized portion that was in the lottery also, and it would have worked out that that's what Yosef would have received. So Rashi's explanation, while it, you know, Rashi is satisfying certain things. He's satisfying our question of how it is that large end up with large and small end up with small. He's saying it's all done via lottery, and that's that. And they put in 12 appropriately sized pieces, and they ended up with the shvatim that they were supposed to end up with, and that's that. But it raises all sorts of other questions about how this actually worked. Second approach is Ramban. And Ramban says something that others have said here as well. Take a look at source number 5, which is taken from his commentary to Parashas Vayechi, and it goes over onto the second side. The Hebrew does. The English is all on the second side. Eretz Yisrael l'shvatim nischalka. Israel was divided up by tribe. 12 chalakim shavim asumimena. They made 12 portions that were all equal from Israel. V'natal shevet Shimon hamamu'ad shebahem k'shevet Yehuda shemaru ba'uchlasin. So Shimon, the smallest of the tribes, actually received the same size as Yehuda. V'natlu Ephraim u'Menashe k'ruven v'Shimon b'shava. And Ephraim u'Menashe get portions equal to those of Reuven and Shimon. U'masha amar akasuv larav tarben achlasov lama'at tamid. As far as the pasuk that says, give more to the many and less to the few. Le'inyin batei avos hanizkarim b'parsha dibur akasuv. That's talking about the families who are mentioned there. Sheshevet mechalek chalko lebatei avot shayotzei Mitzrayim. With the shevet dividing up their portion based on the families who left Egypt. Ubeis av meruba nosen lo chilek gadol, ubeis av memuat nosen lo chilek katan. A large family got a larger portion, a small family got a smaller portion. Right? That was suggested here. The lottery is as far as which portion you're going to get of the tribal portions, and then you figure out the many and the few in terms of the families within the shevet. So he has solved the problem of how we have a goral. He has solved the problem of how it is that we end up managing large and small. We do it within each portion. What's the problem with his approach?
Are they even, actually, the geographical?
Yeah, they're not even. I don't know what kind of map he had. But it doesn't... Right. Oddly, his art scroll didn't have the maps in it. He had the other version. That's a very difficult problem. Right, Shimon. Right. What he's talking about with Shimon also bothers me. I'm not clear on what he was doing there. That was not clear to me. It also means, if you go back to source number 1, he's out of order. I think Abarbanel was the one who pointed this out. If you take a look at the source number 1, it started out with Larav Tarben Nachlasov Lamat Tamit Nachlasov. Give the large one more, the small one less. And then it goes on to talk about the goral, which is for the tribes. It's out of order. He had that as the families, you know, the large and the small. So he's talking about how you divide up families within a portion, and then he's talking about how you get your portion. It's a very strange way for Pesukim to operate. But that's Ramban's approach. The third approach is Ralbag.
But what about when he didn't spell the Yaakov thing?
Did he solve the Yaakov thing? Yeah, he did, because now they're getting a double portion.
Within
he has said that all 12 portions are of equal size, so they're getting two of those. Yeah.
Unless you then expand and constrict after everyone gets their equal portion.
I mean, we could invent that.
They're not equal portions.
Negotiated after.
You're talking about for every Shevet or specifically for Menashe?
That's what I was thinking.
For every Shevet. So I mean, that's not his view. That's a general possibility.
Like
yeah.
Harvan Tami, but maybe it's after the fact. You each put a thing now, okay, constrict, you constrict, and you widen because, and then maybe they just have their
right. So hold on until you see Ralbag, because I have a feeling that's what you're saying. But I think what you're saying is Ralbag's view.
But how can he say they get equal if they don't have equal?
That who gets equal?
Well, he's saying it's equal.
You mean that the portions are. Right, and I don't know what to do with that. Yeah. So take a look at number 6. Ralbag has a third perspective. He says, Hanachon be'enai, what appears right in my eyes, is Sheshivas hachalakim hayu shavim. The 7 portions were all equal, and you'll see why he says 7. We're not on that right now. But the 7 portions were even. He's speaking later. If you notice, his commentary comes from Parakid Ches. But he says these portions are all even. The Yaraha Goral Achar Ze Yehoshua Lifnei Hashem Bishilo Umishal Lakach Kol Echad Me'ashvat Ma'im Chalko Lefi Haro'uilo. He says, you know what they did? You got your portion. There were 12 equal portions that were in the lot. or 7 or 9, depending on which phase you're talking about. But the tribes are all getting equal portions given to them by the Goral, and then they all adjust as needed. So you'll get the larger, you'll get the smaller, we'll just make it all work out in the end. Which, by the way, Sima, that was your suggestion,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, either it's God-given and then all those boundaries are determined in here, and maybe he tells Yeshua, and Yeshua tells him these are going to be boundaries, or there's an active commandment to Tarbeh and Tamiz. So
that's what you're following.
Yeah, so now you have to do that part. And also, did they know the land well enough to do it off the top of their head? So, like, is it coming down with all the instructions? Or practically, it makes sense that they didn't get all those boundaries defined because maybe they know the land from Concord, but maybe not everybody knows the land. That then afterwards, they have to make those adjustments when they're in the land.
Can you imagine the fights? Isn't this whole thing supposed to avoid, but you got more and I got less? Could you imagine if I say, you shrink your borders back a little,
yeah.
I'm just going to take a little more of your land.
Yeah, well, that was Liba's question, right? That's what you were asking.
What?
What's the point of doing the lottery now at all?
Right, and if you have to work it out amongst yourselves, then what's the point of the lottery? Like, this is yours. Oh, but you have, like, 4 families left. Okay, so give them, like, then, I mean, it's
yeah.
Like the Clash of Rose Nightmare. I mean, like, it's, like, how does that work? And then, exactly, like Ora said, then you start with, well, we had it, but then we have to give it to them, so now we have less.
Great. I have a theory about this, but I want to hold it for a bit until we see the fourth view.
Was it discussed with each human happy with what they got? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, that's coming up.
And also, I want to know if a Shavit, if they're ever, you know, if they both are in agreement, if they switch their lots, is that something they can do? Do they have to keep this lot?
Like, so, well, according to what he's saying, you do get to trade.
What?
According to what he's saying, you do get to.
That's what I'm saying.
Now you get to, you have to.
Yeah.
Well, trade them. Parts of your life, right? Yeah, so I guess you're saying they are going to discuss this. Like,
well, there are going to be problems.
There
yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because I never read past this in Yeshua ever.
Yeah, no one ever goes past this in Yeshua. This is true. Most people would not be aware that there was a parakeet ches. For all they know, those are blank pages.
Yeah.
Well, you know that.
Yeah.
At a certain point, Yeshua just started writing, Mary has a little letter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It got really technical, so the school stopped teaching it, right?
So Ralbach's view is indeed that the Shvatim get equal portions, and then they play with the boundaries as they need to. But yes, the challenge is, what's your benefit of the Goral? How have you gained something by that? As well as the problem of how did you actually manage this on a practical level? What's your mechanism for doing this without creating strife?
Can you not?
So yeah, when we get to Parakeet Ches, you'll see the breakdown.
Also, it's not like they're even there to say, like, oh, there's enough space, there's not enough space, right? Like, it's not
praying
like
for together,
right?
Well, I don't
talking
know
about
because
it in theory, but like, how do you move all those people and then?
So the thing is, when we get to the actual divisions, we find them describing actual places. The challenge is whether this is something that was written in at the time of the Goral, or whether Yehoshua, when he puts together the Sefer, because Yehoshua is the author of this part of the Sefer, you know, afterwards, when everybody's already spread out and they've identified, is that when he's, you know, naming all these places? I don't know the answer.
But how do they know the name? And who knows the population?
Like, so they clearly have sent out scouts who have gone around and who have identified some sort of topography. They have to.
Like, it almost sounds like it's, they're making a map, right? Okay, well, maybe that's not big enough because you got so many people, but, like, how do they know?
But I'm wondering how the heck. Is Yeshua the one who knows which tribes are the biggest? Is there a census done? Like, how do they know the size?
So we had the census in the Midbar. Right before entering, we did a census. So that we have, and there is a discussion in the Gemara about whether it was based on the census when they left Egypt, or the census when they entered the land, or some hybrid, it's a blended system. But yes, the numbers they have, but yeah, they have to be playing with some kind of map that someone, I mean, remember, they've been there for 7 years by this time, and we'll see the proof of that in Parakeet Daled. But it's already been 7 years in the land, of battles and conquests and whatever. So there has been time for people to circulate and to make some kind of rough map that will outline, portions. That could have been done.
I guess you could say, like, if a small tribe has been living in a big piece of land and they see that they're not even using it all, they might be more willing to say, okay, we don't really need overpass that hill, right? Like, you guys right. can
but
take
they
it over,
but not livable space.
Or the barren land or the hilly land.
Well, Rashi said they did, right? That was Rashi's line at the end of his comment in source number 4. Right? He said one portion will be better than the next, so it's not strictly based on size. It's based on value as well, and what you're able to do with it. Yeah. So let's take a look quickly at not quickly, I don't know, but we'll take a look at Abarbanel / Malbim, and then I'm going to give you what I think is the answer regarding the benefit of the Goral. Source number 7. Abarbanel writes, Chalukas ha'aretz haya ra'uy sheyuvchanu ba shnei devarim. He says the division of the land involved two different elements. You can identify two elements within it. Ha'echad ha'mechoz asher bo yutam l'chol shevet chalko v'nachlaso. One is the region, the area, in which each tribe is going to get its portion. V'habez, the second one, kamut ha'aretz le'orka ulerochba, the size of the land they're going to get, length and width, breath, asher nasan l'chol echad mehem ba'usa ha'mechoz, which he gave them all, you know, in whatever region was appropriate for them. V'hine ha'inyan ha'rishon shu be'ur ha'machoz asher bo yipol nachlas kol shevet v'shevet ra'ah ha'kel yisbarach leva'er oso begoral. So he says the first point, defining you're going to be at the northern seashore, or you're going to be in Harei Yehuda, although it can't be called Harei Yehuda yet, but wherever you're going to be, what region you're going to be in, that Hashem clarifies via lottery. To avoid strife between the tribes. Because one place would in fact be better than another. But the second matter, that wasn't done by lottery. The second matter being quantity of land. That wasn't done at all by lottery. So he's more extreme than Ralbag. Ralbag said we're giving everybody equal portions. And then they're going to play with the boundaries. He says, no, the first part said seashore, mountains, Negev, whatever it was. And then the second thing they do, which is not by lottery, is to decide how much each is going to get. Hine zelo hayame ha-goral. That was not from the lottery. Kehaya ze mastur li Yoshua el Elazar ha-kohen u'lishne masar nisiyei ho-ida. That was given to Yoshua, Elazar, and the 12 princes from each tribe. Sheyiru kol shevet riboy anashav v'laravi abunach laso v'lamaad yidnu chelek katan. Each shevet is going to see what its numbers are, and they get more for these and less for those. That's Abarbanel's way of looking at it. You are told you're going north, you're going west, you're going south, and then we have to figure out exactly what that means and what your boundaries are going to be, based on what we see as the necessity. We have this council of the Jewish people, and they are responsible. By the way, he didn't pick those names out of a hat. That's going to be Yudalad Pasuk Aleph, is where they are charged with the responsibility of doing the distribution. You follow? That's what Abarbanel says. If you take a look at source number 8, Malbim as well. He says, Hadas hayoser tzodekes be'echut ha'chaluka. He says, the view that appears more correct in terms of how the division was done, he does haravid. He says that's the view of the ravid, which is also going to be Abarbanel's view. Vizela shono da v'havein ki eretz Yisrael nischalka liyud be'shvatim begoral ve'urim v'tumim. He says you have to know and understand that Israel was divided up among 12 tribes by lottery and by the urim v'tumim. And that's the Gemara's question. The Gemara asks, was it divided up by Shevet, meaning this is Reuven's portion, this is Shimon's portion, whatever, or by individual head, by person? They were asking about the Goral. And the Gemara's answer is to look at the pasuk that says whether a lot or a little, meaning bein shevet meruba l'shevet muad yial pi agoral. The division of the tribes between great tribe, small tribe, whatever, is going to be by lottery. But for families, they didn't use the lottery. Od nishar lanu tana, but then we have a question remaining. Im achalakim lo hayu shavim, eich hilku begaral. If the portions are not even, how did they use a lottery? V'lefnei garal, eich yadua lemi yirbu lemi yamitu. Before you've done your lottery, how do you know who's going to get a lot, who's going to get a little? V'im yetzei agaral chelek meruba l'shevet hamuad, eich yeh. What are you going to do if a large portion falls to a small tribe? Meaning, imagine that, you create your goral, and you're trying to plan this in advance. So you write out your pieces of paper, and you say, you know what, I think we probably need 8 large ones and 4 small ones, or whatever it is. And it turns out there are 5 small tribes. So someone's going to get a large portion that doesn't fit him, unless you have calculated in advance, in which case you're not using goral at all. He says the lottery is going to have even portions. O shavim b'mida, either even by measure, o shavim b'hashva'ad damim, or in terms of its financial value, o hashva'ad karka, or by having the same equal land in terms of its worth. So he says you're going to have to say that in the goral, all it said was the regions. He says, like we'll say, from this boundary and further, that's Catalonia. I don't know where Catalonia is. I'm American. It's somewhere in Spain. Umitchum ploni ulahalan mechoz Provence. Right? Provence is in a certain place. So too, that's what they did. They wrote the regions and they put them in the box. And whatever region came up, that was your portion. And whatever was larger or smaller, that's what they gave him. Adkan Devar, he says, end of quote from the Ravid. And Hine Tiradato Kedas Moreno Rabbi Yitzchak Abarbanel, that's the view of the Abarbanel as well. That's the way that that Malbim, Ravid, and Abarbanel frame this. That you get a region in which to live by the Goral, and then after that, everybody works out the specifics of exactly how much land you're going to get. So, to go back to the question that we asked before, how does this actually solve our problems? Aren't we still going to end up in a situation in which people are unhappy about the portions that they get, because they're going to get more, they're going to get less primarily, have to give away. So I think there are two points that have to be understood. Number one is that realistically, you have enough land for everybody. The issue is not, is there going to be enough land for us to live in? When you run into trouble, is this one wants seashore, or this one wants to grow grapes, you know, up north, or this one wants to have, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is, that's where you get into trouble.
I think mostly they would find out where the seashore, right? Nobody wants a dead city.
Well, you're putting our values on it, right? I mean, if I was a farmer, I don't know that I'd want a seashore. Right? I mean, people who want to engage in shipping business, you know, will go to the seashore. But if I'm a farmer, I'd rather have low-lying fields.
And yet they only gave two tribes at the seashore. And
right.
They divided up, you'd think they could have given a lot more. Like Usher is all the way down, right?
Right.
From what I remember just being out.
But I had a little bit of the whole side.
I don't know, only two of them would have the seashore, right?
Well, that actually makes a lot of sense, because in following what Abarbanel and the others have now suggested, realistically, if your lottery came out with seashore on like 5 of theirs, right? Mm-hmm. You'd have a much harder time dividing it up. If two of them have it, so, all right, so this one will get this, and that one will get that, and we'll work it out. If you have 5 of them on the seashore, I wish you a lot of luck trying to figure that out. So maybe that makes sense. But the other point that I wanted to make that I think is critical in understanding how this works.
Location.
Yeah. Is that you don't actually want too much land. Having too much land is bad. Not that you have to protect it, you have to conquer it in the first place. Mm-hmm. There are inhabitants, and as we've already seen, the Jews did not root out all of the inhabitants. So getting more land can actually be a problem. You know, there is, within the spectrum of land you can have, there is less than I need, there is what I need, and then there is an infinite amount, which is more than I need. And realistically, because you have enough for everybody, you're not going to run into a situation in which people have less than they need. But you could well end up in a situation where people have more than they need, and now they're stuck, because they have to worry about the residents, they have to worry about wild animals, right? They're not able to protect themselves properly. So I don't think you run into a situation in which people are fighting and saying we need more. Although we're going to see what happens with Yosef and where his eyes. So yeah. So I'm saying this knowing that we have to deal with what happens there, because when you see the answer to Yosef, you'll see what I'm talking about. Realistically, the issue of where you're going to be matters more than how much you're going to receive. And so that's why this system that they're describing is workable. That's my understanding. With that in mind, take a look, please, at Perek Yud Daled.
How many are they now in total when they're going in?
Men of military age, you're talking about 603,000 or so. 603, 550, something like that. Minus all the people you took out to be on the eastern side of the Yarden. Uh-huh. Right? So you're, you know, less maybe 130,000 or so, 140,000. I don't remember anymore, and I don't even know also how Menashe breaks down in that regard. But you're now down to somewhere below 500,000 men of military age. Multiply it out to recognize that there are women, children, not so many elderly, because all the males are gone. But you know, you're talking about a couple of million people. But I think it's a very doable thing in terms of dividing up the land. I don't think they're running into trouble on that front. So it begins, Ve'ela asher nachalu b'nei Yisrael be'eretz Kanaan. These are the ones who divided up the portions for the Jews in Canaan. Asher nachalu osam elazar haKohen v'Yoshua ben Nun v'Rashei avos hamatos l'bnei Yisrael, as we already read before. Elazar, Yoshua, and the heads of the Shvatim. Various commentaries note here the fact that Elazar is listed before Yehoshua, which is a funny thing because Yehoshua is king. But if you go back to Parshas Pinchas, where Yehoshua is first set up as the leader, it says, "V'lifnei Elazar haKohen ya'amod, v'shalo b'mishpat ha'urim lifnei Hashem." Yehoshua is going to stand in front of Elazar, and he will ask him for counsel from the Urim V'tumim. Elazar is in the superior position when it comes to Urim V'tumim type things, and therefore it makes sense for Elazar to be listed first. Begoral nachlasam, in the lot of their portions, we're in Pasuk Base. Kasher tziva Hashem biyad Moshe, as Hashem instructed via Moshe, l'sish as hamatos v'chatzi hamateh, for the 9.5 tribes. Kinasan Moshe nachlas shnei hamatos v'chatzi hamateh me'iver la'yardin, because the portion on the eastern side of the Yarden, those 2.5 tribes, that had already been done on the other side of the Yarden, and the Levim didn't have a portion in there either. So that leaves us with 9.5, which is how we know that it wasn't 12 pieces. It wouldn't have made any sense. Kiyayu b'nei Yosef, and he has to continue with the math actually, Kiyayu b'nei Yosef, shnei matos, Menashe v'Ephraim, because Yosef counts for 2. They didn't give the Levim a chelek, and as we already said last time, chelek here means a tribal portion. They had cities in which to dwell, and their yards and zones outside of the cities, for their cattle, for their property. They did have cities, they just didn't have a chunk of land that would be the shevet's property. Kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe, as Hashem instructed Moshe, Kain asu b'nei Yisrael, so the Jews did, vayach leku es haaretz, and they divided up the land. Clear? Okay. That is where we get into trouble. Because now we actually have to divide it up, and the very first thing that we find is going to cause us a bit of a problem. Take a look, please, at the next piece here. And we'll start with it, but we're going to have to continue with it next time. Vayikshu b'nei Yehuda el Yoshua bar Gilgal. So the people of Yehuda go to Yoshua in Gilgal. Gilgal, remember, was where they camped initially when they entered the land. But this is now, this conversation, as we'll see in a moment, is occurring at the end of their 7 years of conquest. Vayomer elav, Kalev ben Yefuneh ha-Knizi. Kalev ben Yefuneh. The Knizi, he's always known as the Knizi. It does not mean that he was of the tribe, the Canaanite tribe Knizi, who live in the land that Hashem had told Abraham about. The word Kenaz itself was not, so to speak, Canaanite property. He is known as of Kenaz, could mean a descendant, unclear. So Kalev says to Yehoshua, and you sort of have to imagine this scene, okay? Kalev and Yehoshua were the two good Meraglim 47 years ago, right? And the Kalev especially has this image of being the grizzled warrior type. He was one who silenced everybody when they were speaking against Moshe. Yehoshua is the student who was in Moshe's tent, right? Learning and so on. And you know, and even though he does lead them to war, somehow, in maybe just my imagination, but I see Kalev as much more of the old fighter and Yehoshua much more as the scholar. But Kalev says to him, you know, that which Hashem told Moshe, the man of God, regarding me and regarding you in Kadesh Barnea. Kadesh Barnea was the place from which they were sent as spies. So you remember what Hashem said. Ben arvoim shana anochi b'shlavach Moshe eved Hashem osi mi Kadesh Barnea l'ragel ha-saharet. He says, I was 40 years old back then when Moshe sent me to go out and spy out the land. And I did what I was supposed to do. I answered him in accord with what was in my heart, meaning I was loyal, I didn't go along with the plot. Whereas those who were with me, they caused the heart of the nation to melt. V'anochi, or cause it to move. There are different ways you can take the word himsiv. V'anochi milesi achrei Hashem Elokai. I did it. I followed God. And milei achrei Hashem is a phrase that Moshe actually used when describing them in the Chumash, when describing the two good Meraglim. Vayishava Moshe bayama hulimur. So Moshe swore on that day, saying, "Im lo haaretz asher darcha raglcha ba lecha siyel lenachala ulvanecha ad olam kini leisa achrei Hashem Elokai." The promise was that the land where I walked, that land would be for me and for my descendants forever. Moshe promised that this land was going to me. Ve'ata, and now, Hine hechya Hashem osi, kasher diber, God has kept me alive as he promised he would. Ze arba'im v'chamesh shana, me'az diber Hashem as hadavar hazeh al Moshe. It's been 45 years since Hashem told this to Moshe. And remember, it was the second year in the Midbar when they had this conversation. So it's been 45 years since then. Asher halach Yisrael bamidbar. Ve'atai hine anochi hayom ben chamesh u'shmonim shana. He says, I'm 85 years old today. And I have news for you, Yehoshua. Odeni hayom chazak asher b'yom shloach osi Moshe kekochi az u'kekochi ata. He says, I'm just as strong today as I was then. Back then when I was 40 and I was sent out, I was capable and I'm capable today. And don't try to put me out of the pasture is sort of the underlying theme. He says, La milchama, vilatzeis, vilavo. He says, I can go to war. Don't tell me that it's time for me to retire. And so he says, Ve'ata, and now, t'nali esahar hazeh, asher diber Hashem b'yom ahu. So give me that mountain that God was talking about on that day, that the land where I walked, that's supposed to indeed go to my family. Ki ata shamata bayamahu ki anakim sham. You heard that day, way back when, that there were giants there. Ve'arim gedolos bitzuros, and there are great cities, fortresses. Ulai Hashem osi, maybe God will be with me. V'horashtim kasher diber Hashem, and I will conquer them as Hashem spoke. So he says to Yehoshua, I deserve Hebron. I was promised it way back when. Actually, I told you it was Hebron. The pasuk didn't say it was Hebron, but the next pasuk will say it's Hebron. But there is a mountain that is supposed to go to my family. Moshe promised it to me. I am as strong now as I was then, so I am fully capable of it. It's time for you to give me this land. And he comes with his tribe assembled, with Bnei Yehuda along with him, to make his case from Yehoshua. It sounds like he's expecting opposition, that he needs to make this speech and he needs to bring all the people with him. It sounds like this is not necessarily a friendly conversation that's going on between them. And we'll see what happens and how it plays out. But it raises certain questions. Just how much freedom does Yehoshua have? There's a go-roll. There's a lottery. Is Yehuda supposed to get this? Is Yehuda not supposed to get this? How does this fit in with having a goral when Moshe can just promise somebody Chevron? You know, it's sort of like you have a system and everything is supposed to be set, and then along comes one person and just wrecks everything. How is this actually going to play out? So God willing, next week we will learn the fate of Kalev and Chevron and the giants and so on.